6 is my show. It's our show in Toronto. So like, if people don't like it, I will be personally offended. I feel like I have a lot riding on this. Like,
sometimes you just see a show and you're like, David Mirvish loves this show.
Talk about one of the best shows we've seen this year.
Talk about one of the best shows we've seen this year. Shocking. Talk about it.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to After Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater from the comfort of my car. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, it is the Toronto and surrounding areas 2023-2024 season preview. Now, before we get into that, our last episode was obviously the Broadway / New York season preview. And since then, which was only what, like 20 days ago, 25 Literally. Days ago, it's September 26th when we're recording this episode. So much has happened. I can't believe this season.
The season even fuller than we already thought it was, and we thought it was a pretty full season.
Yeah. So, since recording, I want to say, like, literally the next day was a Rialto chatter that Lempicka is coming to Broadway, which is what we predicted. It still has
Can you
no
explain
confirmed.
What a Rialto chatter is for us?
Just Isn't it, like, know? Some man who writes, like, rumors? It's literally a blind item, is it not?
It's on Broadway World, right?
Yeah.
And it's, like, a series, an ongoing series, and they write it similarly to blind items based on casting notices, based on rumors, inside information.
It's basically someone that is doing the work for everybody else.
Yes.
So this person saw that there was a casting notice that went up for Lempicka for New York and whatever the time period was, which is about like spring 2024, and was like, Broadway, it's happening. And it wasn't all of the roles, it was only some of the roles, which leads everyone to believe that like Eden Espinosa will be reprising like her role. So again, that was like literally the next day. It's not 100% confirmed, but it's like 95% confirmed, so that should be happening shortly. Something that did get 100% confirmed and something that we did predict was going to happen based on your targeted Instagram ad, which was the announcement of Water for Elephants confirmed for Broadway next spring. It will be playing at the Imperial Theater, which was recently housed to Bad Cinderella, because I saw it there. I really like that theater. I think there's not a bad seat in that theater.
The Imperial is a beautiful theater. The first Broadway theater I was ever in.
What was it for?
Billy Elliot.
Oh, Billy Elliot. Okay.
The Imperial.
So I do think that's a good theater. Again, as discussed on the previous episode, I don't know. I think this show works on Broadway, but we shall see. And then a couple days after that was the transfer notice. I think it was at Atlantic Theater Company earlier this year, which is Days of Wine and Roses. This is a limited run at Studio 54 starring Kelly O'Hara and Brian Nursey James.
Brian Nursey James.
And I said to you just before we started recording, like, how dare they enter this full season?
Just drop a bomb. They're just like, we're coming back. We're here.
They're like, you know, we haven't been nominated in a long time. Maybe this is the year for this. So,
has Brian Dorsey James ever won a Tony?
I don't know. You know who's a winner?
It's a 4-time nominee.
Kelly O'Hara. She's a winner.
Kelly O'Hara did win. It took her a long time, but she is a Tony Award winner.
She is a winner.
She's a winner. Deserved.
Yes. And then the final Rialto chatter that happened, what was this, like last week, I think you sent it to me, is the Heart of Rock and Roll, which is a Huey Lewis musical. Now, I remember hearing Matt Doyle talk about this a million years ago.
Right.
Because he started it with, I believe, Katie Rose Clark. It looks fun. It looks like it's kind of like Grease-esque. But, like, the season is busy, guys. Like, I don't know. And it's only September 26th, and, like, what else could be coming? It's wild.
I'm so excited. I cannot wait to see if there's more stuff coming this season. I feel like last episode we were kind of down on the season a little bit. Not feeling that excited, but with the new announcements, I'm reinvigorated.
There are still theaters open. I'm just looking at this list. We also did learn a couple days ago that The Wiz will be at the Marquee Theater. There is also now some photos because that touring production has started. The costumes look stunning. I'm so excited for that show to be on Broadway. But in terms of theaters, so Imperial is now taken, so we can cross that off. Studio 54 is now taken. The Marquee is now taken. So we are left with the Majestic, which is still housing the ghost of the Phantom of the Opera.
What can go in there? I really can't imagine another show being in there.
Love Never Dies.
That's the only answer. That's the only answer. I really can't imagine another show in there. I don't know how they're going to do it. Like, it's like, if Chicago closed, what are they going to put in the Ambassador?
But the Ambassador feels different because, like, the Majestic, that whole, like, alleyway is so tied to Phantom. That balcony when Andrew Lloyd Webber was DJing during the pandemic. Like, it's just so tied to the Phantom. And then the other two theaters that are still available are the Long Acre and the Lyceum. So they're still
those are both good houses because they're like
and the Palace, but the Palace is not ready.
Palace isn't ready. We're not ready for the Palace. Can't wait to see what reopens the Palace. Gotta be something really good.
Last thing that was in the Palace to close the Palace was SpongeBob. So should we just bring it back for revival?
Let's bring SpongeBob back. Who's in the front row seeing SpongeBob?
Me. Ethan Slater and Ariana Grande.
I was going to say Ariana Grande is in the front row seeing SpongeBob.
Yeah, our last piece of news before we get into the season preview is that also yesterday, another Ethan Slater, Ariana Grande spotting.
They were at Disney.
At Disney in Florida with Frankie Grande.
We also do have one last thing. We have a real-time update. We have friends who just saw Back to the Future the musical. They left it. They're literally probably walking out right now. I think they're at the stage door currently.
Amazing.
Some reviews. The whole show was so fun and I almost cried. So, medium.
Wait, sorry. Go back. Oh, you're going to save the best one for last.
At intermission, she says, it's phenomenal. Marty and Doc are insanely talented. Lorraine's voice. I love the... George is honestly the funniest to watch. The car scenes, the lighting and spectacle is so incredible. He's really carrying it. Him and Doc are incredible. Such a silly show. Amber is amazing. So shout out to Amber Ardolino. We've got a fan.
Shout out to TikTok superstar Amber Ardolino.
No, literally, she's like, that's why I'm going to the stage door for Amber. After the show... Oh, then she's saying, can't even explain how fun they're making it. Like, when they realize they're time traveling and it works. Dancers come and it's so campy, over the top. It's giving Young Frankenstein. What a review. Which, wow. Roger Bart, Young Frankenstein.
Roger Bart,
Young Frankenstein. Breaking fourth wall, lots of comedy bits. It's interesting. My note is that the actors are just so good, but I wonder how it will hold up with different actors' leads. The music is amazing, but it's forgettable.
If you would like to listen to what we said on our episode last week, we actually said the music was trash. So
trash. We really did. Jake's note, they're on their honeymoon, her husband. Is that
mini
everyone,
moon. They're on their mini, mini moon.
They're on a mini moon. Jake's note is that everyone besides the doc is doing impressions of the character. It's super cheeky. I love it. I feel like it'll do well because it's so well loved. After the show's over, this is the review. Best show I've ever seen, which is shocking to me because I have been to New York with her.
You guys saw Head Over Heels, which you both...
We saw Head Over Heels.
Hated, or she hated. Which was the bottom. Both of you?
We saw... It was... I can't even speak of it. It's hard to explain. We saw The Prom. We saw...
My Fair Lady.
Once on This Island, we saw My Fair Lady. She saw In the Heights with Corbin Bleu.
And this is the best show she's ever seen. But what I will say is that in between when we recorded that episode and today, we were talking about the Broadway process of Back to the Future and how, like, this is a name player of a show and people are going to go see it. It just extended their ticket sales to June 2024. So... Yes.
Well,
they're making it to the Tonys.
they went and our friend who went said this is her husband's favorite movie. Like, that's they're excited to go because they love this movie.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And so for movie lovers, you know, they have notes obviously, but they had a wonderful time at the show. So I think it's interesting. But yeah, okay, let's talk about Toronto.
Back to the city. It's a very exciting time in the city. This week is a very exciting time in particular because so much is going on. Again, as I said, it's September 26th, the day that we were recording. And actually on this very day is the first preview of In Dreams in Toronto. And a few days ago was the first preview of Six. So I feel like 6 is where we should start because we're going to sort of go in like order here.
Yes. We're going to start with the Mervish season.
Yes, we're going to start with Mervish. 6, when they announced that it was coming to Toronto, we were obviously very excited. If you've listened to any of our episodes, you know how much we love this show.
From the beginning of the podcast, 6 has been a through line of the entire podcast the past 4 years.
We had never been so excited sitting in an out-of-town theater ever to see something because it was so original and so amazing. And I'm so excited to see this iteration of 6. It's mostly a Canadian cast. And we were discussing before we started to record, some of these girls like just graduated from Shannon. Yes. So it's very exciting.
It is so exciting. I mean, this musical, as we know, is just an absolute party. You know, thinking about it, getting to see 6 now post Renaissance tour, post Eras tour, not that we've seen those, but in a post-Renaissance, post-Eras world, I feel like it'll almost feel even more different because this is a concert moment. You're capturing that energy of a concert in a musical. And I think we're so primed for that. We're primed for female-led stories, female-led shows, so much more. I think this is like the perfect time for 6, to be honest.
It's actually interesting, like, as you were saying that and thinking about, like, the Eras concert.
Olivia,
like,
Rodrigo, the Guts tour.
Yeah, like, all of these things. But thinking about, like, the Eras concert movie that's going into theaters, I'm like, film 6? Film 6. Put it in theaters.
Olivia Rodrigo is Anne Boleyn. Think about this.
Is she kind of
Anne Boleyn. Anne Boleyn. Another Maybe they'll change their inspiration for Anne Boleyn. Olivia Rodrigo.
Don't you think?
Or do you think she's like a Kay Howard? No, I think she's more punk
than she is pop, I would say, at this current stage of her career.
Yeah.
Full disclosure, we are going to opening night in a couple of days. So we will be talking about 6 again in the future. But yeah, it's very exciting. I do want to shout out Mervish because I think they've done an amazing job with their making of the show videos that they've been putting on social media. This is kind of the first time that we've really seen a behind the scenes look.
I read that there's a Toronto Star article about the Queens of 6 and each of them got to talk a little bit, but my favorite thing that I took away from that article is the costume designer for 6 was the costume designer for the Spice Girls Spice World tour. And I was like, I see it.
Oh,
you
my know, God.
You create these, isn't that insane?
The boots, the shoes.
You create these kind of individual but cohesive looks for all the girls, and that's what the Spice Girls were, right? They each had their own identity, but they were like a cohesive look all together, and that's what 6 has done. And they've created these, you know, each girl, you look at them and you their whole costume tells a story all about them,
right?
Whether it be, you know, the necklace or the skirt,
the crown,
or the hairpiece. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think by having someone who's costume designed an actual like pop star
world tour,
like, makes so much sense for this. That's what excited me most about it. But it's a great article. And each of them talk a little bit about their queenspirations and about how they got the role. And it's a good, it's a good article.
I will say, similar to last year and how Anne Juliet was our show, 6 is my show. It's our show in Toronto. So like, if people don't like it, I will be personally offended. I feel like I have a lot riding on this. Like,
the word of mouth. We've been talking about the show for 4 years. Everyone we know is like, gotta see 6 because you told me.
But it's so funny because I'm a little nervous because like, we've really hyped this up.
We've hyped it up. Everyone I know who goes to the theater.
Like, even Shara has not seen this. And she's listened to us talk about it for 4 years.
She's listened to the cast
every
recording.
Every day. So like, if it's not as good as I think it is, I'm going to be disappointed. So
no, I know. It better be good.
I'm very excited for opening night because those audiences...
Me too. The energy is always so good on opening night.
Yeah, so it'll be very exciting. But so 6 and In Dreams are running simultaneously right now. So to talk about In Dreams a bit, this is another David West Reed production. Speaking of Anne Juliet, it is a Roy Orbison jukebox musical. And it's starring one of our faves, Lena Hall, who's in Toronto. I'm very excited to see her.
She tweeted that Toronto has really good homewares. You can't find this stuff in the States. And I'm like, girl, we think that about you.
I wanted the Home like, Goods.
Where's our Target? Where's our Target?
Yeah, where is she Target shopping? Drop the places.
Probably just go to HomeSense.
Where do you think they're really staying? Think
good question.
Like in those probably, towers near the Mervish theaters.
I wonder if they like opted to find their own accommodations or if they were like put up where. Mm-hmm. Because is this a West End transfer?
It is a West End transfer. Actually, I don't know if or it's like going on to the West End
after.
That's a great question. Let's
In Dreams musical. Let's go.
It definitely played. It was at Leeds Playhouse.
Okay.
We know this about the West End, that it's weird that like off West End and on West End are still like in contention for awards. So they don't really, it's not like off Broadway, on Broadway, off Mervish, on Mervish, right? Like it's all kind of the same.
Yes, smaller houses are eligible for Olivier's in the way that, let's say, like off-Broadway is not eligible for Tony Awards. They have a much grander, a much broader definition in the West End of a theater, which I think is good, which I love.
Yeah, it allows more people to, like, it allows for more work to be seen by a larger group of people, which is very exciting. This is also, David Westreed, Luke Shepherd, collaboration again, which he also did and Juliet. He's kind
of got Oliver Thompson. It's got Oliver Thompson in it.
Yes, exactly.
West End cast of and Juliet. So it's a reunion for a lot of people here.
I really haven't read anything out of the West End. I kind of want to walk into this blind and not know anything. I've seen like a couple of the clips that they've put on Mervish. It is at the Ed Mervish, which is the big theater.
Big.
But like the coloring of the set looks beautiful. As I said, like I am a Lena Hall fan, so just hearing her voice again live, I'm very excited for.
Yeah, I can't wait to see this. It seems kind of different from things we've seen before, but maybe I'm just making that up. I was not super impressed by the video clips, but I do think that video clips often do shows a disservice and make them look much worse than they actually are in person, so we shall see what it ends up looking like.
The final thing that I'll say about In Dreams is this was something that we discussed in our last episode, and it's still a question mark of will this transfer to Broadway?
Right.
And I really do think it will depend on how it runs here. A North American, we've talked about this many, many times before, but a North American audience is very different to a UK audience. So I'll be interested to see like if the jokes hit here, if they're written in a British style, like we don't really know. So that's a question mark.
I'm kind of getting Fisherman's Friend vibes from the trailer.
I was so excited about that, but then we didn't like it. My parents loved it, though.
Blah. I know, they did. It was just, Fisherman's Friend just kind of ended up being blah to me. And I'm concerned this is going to kind of be blah again. So
we'll see.
By the time this episode airs, we will have seen it.
You're right.
So,
and we will be doing an episode on it.
We absolutely will be doing an episode on it.
You'll be able to hear our full thoughts on In Dreams in a few episodes.
No current announced plans for any productions beyond this Toronto production. No. So maybe a lot is riding on it.
Yeah, I wonder. It's I don't know. Toronto has obviously had success having out-of-town tryouts here before. So
yeah,
we'll see. And also to continue that like David Mervish UK connection, like it's still holding strong.
We have a lot of West End imports that come here, even if they're not planned for Broadway. Something like Joseph, which we had this past season, a lot of times we will just bring a full West End cast over, or something like Fisherman's Friend, something like The Bodyguard. We will bring a full West End cast over. The shark is broken. We'll just bring a full West End cast over. They'll do a production and then they'll go home. You know, a Mervish season, they're touch and go sometimes. Sometimes you get a lot of plays that are about the weather, and sometimes you get seven musicals.
We should mention. Thank you, Mervish, for giving us seven musicals.
Plus two like out of season musicals.
We'll get to those as we get down. Plus The Illusionists. Never forget The Illusionists.
Never forget To Kill a Mockingbird.
We're going to get to Off Mervish in a minute. But this is the first time in I think years that there has not been a single play in the main season. And I say thank you.
They bumped it up back to seven shows because it used to be six shows when they brought Hamilton in.
Maybe they're listening to us. For the cost. Maybe they are listening to us.
They listen to Off to Broadway. Every week they tune in to Off to Broadway.
Every 2 weeks. And sometimes three or four. It depends.
No, they're tuning in every week because they re-listen.
Okay, great.
There's no new episode. We're going to listen to a back catalog.
David Mervish, this one's for you. Okay, moving on to the next show. We did talk about this last year because it was supposed to be here last year.
And it was just like, was erased canceled from with the no fanfare. Just like gone.
And that's
gone. And we're like, what's going on?
That's the touring production of Jagged Little Pill. They did announce the cast. Heidi Blinkenstaff will not be coming to Toronto. There is somebody else. I cannot remember her name off the top of my head right now. No. But baby Derek Klena will be coming to Toronto. So we will be seeing both Klena siblings as Nick Healy a few years apart.
Can't wait. Now we're here. We're going to see Dylan Klena, who is, I don't know, a teenager, basically, or like just out of college. Can't wait. Look,
I did see, though. Here's the thing.
Go ahead.
We love Jagged, but Jagged in the sense that, like, the music, the way we've talked about this, go listen to our Jagged episode if you want full review on that. The reorchestration of this Alanis music is some of the best reorchestrations for jukebox I've ever heard.
So good.
It is so, so good. The story is trash.
Trash.
But that's fine. Trash. I did see a tweet that was like, when Heidi leaves the touring cast of Jagged Little Pill, there is no point of the touring cast of Jagged Little Pill.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I do think, though, that the person playing Joe, who is non-binary, which, correct, thank you so much for correcting your mistakes, Jagged Little Pill.
Absolutely.
We love to see this post-pandemic. But I do believe that they are Canadian, so that's exciting. Currently playing Joe in the tour, like, has been for a while, but born in Canada.
Their name is Jade McLeod. I want to say the entire Jagged team.
I want to say, like, Toronto born, but I'm not confident on that, so don't quote me.
Their bio on the website does not say Toronto specifically, but maybe when we get a playbill, we'll be able to.
Yes, I saw it. I got an email of, like, a press release that was, like, and coming back to Canada. So that's very exciting. This will be playing in Ottawa, I believe, first. Because it was also supposed to go to Ottawa last year. But yeah, I'm interested. I'm interested in how the subscribers will like the show, because obviously, like, the music is music that they would know, but the story
Canadian music. We love Alanis in Canada. She's a hometown girl.
Yes, but the story is just wild.
It's a lot. It is overstuffed.
Oh yeah, it's just like so oversaturated too.
Not to give the audience credit, but it is quite a bit of an older audience.
Yes.
Former subscribers. And the show is trying to be very forward-thinking, mm-hmm. which I love, but may not hit or may not be appreciated by some of the audience.
I agree. And also, like, yes, love, but I found that this was very heavy-handed. So
yes, I pick one thing.
Yeah, we can't have like 10 issues in one show. We need to narrow the focus a little bit.
Yeah.
It is interesting. I would actually love to talk to someone on the Mervish teams to know, because I know that the subscriber rate went up once they announced 6 was coming, but I'd be interested to know the actual statistics of the demo. Is it a younger crowd that is now
because of 6
subscribing because of 6? I would be
And even interested. Because of Hamilton a couple years ago.
Hamilton, 6, and Juliet.
Hamilton, it went up and then probably like dropped and then people back again for 6.
Yeah. So,
but, yeah.
It'd be interesting to know. Okay, the next show on the Mervish season is in December and it is 42nd Street. The last time we saw 42nd Street, what did we think?
I love 42nd Street. I love 42nd Street. Can't wait to see it again.
This is another UK transfer. I have seen some video clips from this production. It looks beautiful. The set looks huge. Amazing. The tap, like, I do
Bombastic.
Think this will be. This is a subscriber show. This is
yes.
The one.
This caters to the longtime subscribers for sure. A classic musical about show business. We got costumes. We got dancing. We've got, you know, songs people know. Can't wait.
And that's it.
And that's all I'm going to say about 42nd Street.
No, that's really all I have to say, too.
Look, it's going to be a fun time. I will probably not think of it an hour after I leave the theater.
What if it changes your life?
To be honest, I do think of the production of 42nd Street we saw last year, like,
on the reg.
But I don't think I'm going to think of this specific production.
It's not going to top what we already saw.
Remember Pat Dennings?
I'll never forget Pat Dennings. I'll never forget the girl with the cast. I'll never forget a lot of things from that show.
The guys in the sailor outfits doing tap dancing. It was a community theater production. We had the time of our absolute lives.
Oh yeah, I'd return tomorrow to the same production.
But community theater sometimes just brings you unexpected joys in ways you never thought you would get. Mm-hmm. And that production was everything.
Thankfully, we were sitting alone in the back row because we were laughing.
We could not get a grip.
Okay, and moving on to February, Aladdin is returning to Toronto. Like 10 years later.
Speaking of, after its out of town tryout here in Toronto, it's making a return.
This is one that I'm actually quite interested in because you and I mm-hmm. both saw this when it was in Toronto 10 or yes. so years ago, and we both did not like it. We did not see it together. No. But we did not like it.
We barely even knew each other, to be honest.
Barely. We're just like a blip in each other's lives. But now we will be seeing it again, and I think we will be doing an episode on it.
I agree.
We haven't really done that many like Disney theatrical production episodes because we haven't mm-hmm. seen that many together. But I'm very interested to see what has changed because what always shocked me was after the out-of-town tryout and the Broadway production, everyone was obsessed with it on Broadway. I'm like, are we watching the same show? Because I actually despised it here.
So from what I understand, after they left Toronto... So the big thing in Toronto was you didn't meet the genie until Friend Like Me, which I think right. generally, and which is like in the movie, which I generally think is the right decision storytelling wise, but it does make the first like half of Act One really dull. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand now on Broadway is genie opens the show.
He's in Arabian Nights, right?
Yeah. He was not in Arabian Nights when we saw him here in Toronto at the time.
The other thing that I have read that they've changed was I thought that the characterization of Jasmine in the Toronto out-of-town production was a brat. She was so annoying, so, like...
Speechless?
Speechless is the movie.
Is the movie? What's the one she did in the...
Call Me a Princess.
Right, that's not on Broadway. That did not make it to Broadway.
That song was cut because it was like, why is this girl singing about like how much money she has and she's falling for this like poor man?
That's the thing. These people write these shows and then they try to give the female characters more characterization and they just make it worse. Like these female characters are underwritten and they're like, we're gonna give them another song, and it makes it even worse. Yeah. And now she's just got nothing.
I'm not sure if they've bumped up her like dialogue by taking out a song, but that song was horrible. I just remember leaving the theater being like, wow, they've really like ruined this Disney princess.
Yeah. As a Jasmine lover, as Jasmine being like my favorite princess.
Like we were just talking about before we started recording when we were talking about Back to the Future and like the DeLorean, like the carpet was magical. Carpet. Friend Like Me was amazing. I love the song Proud of Your Boy. So like there's a lot that was going for this. It just like didn't quite come together for me. So with a 10-year break in between, I can't wait to see what we're in store for.
I know. It's I gotta pull out that old program too. Take a look at it. See who was
look at the song Courtney list.
Was it Adam Jacobs? Courtney Reed. That was here in Toronto.
James Monroe Iglehart.
Jafar.
Wasn't it the man that voiced it?
Was it Jonathan Pryce?
I think it was like the voice of the movie. Also, James Monroe Iglehart reminded me that we forgot one piece of news at the beginning, and that is the Lancelot casting in Spamalot, which is Taron Killam, and then he will be succeeded by Alex Brightman, who did it at the Kennedy Center.
Jonathan Freeman played Jafar in Toronto and then on Broadway for a long time. I don't know if he's still doing it. After 8 years with the show, Freeman played his final performance with the company January 23rd, 2022. So he did Jafar on Broadway for 8 years. I mean, there was a pandemic in there, but he did it for 8 years.
Give that man a special Tony.
You know what? Fantastic.
That's amazing. Come back.
In Seattle. Yeah. So yeah, I'm excited to see it again and revisit it because, again, it didn't quite work when we last saw it, but then it seemed like they made a lot of changes when I went into Broadway and I haven't seen it since.
Yeah.
So excited.
And then the next show, which is a show that we have seen, I mean, I've seen many, 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 many times.
I saw it 2 times the last time it was here.
Les Mis is coming back to the city. This is another one that is for the subscribers because the subscribers live for Les Mis.
We love Les Mis. Look, who doesn't love Les Mis?
I'm actually interested though because they kind of similar to like Phantom when it goes on tour, they sort of change how the barricade works in every touring production. So
I've heard this tour is good.
Great.
I've heard this tour is good.
Here's the thing about Les Mis. I've seen it many times. I think it's a show that really never gets old. Whether you love it, you hate it, you still have a good time. And it's absolutely also one of those shows, we've discussed this before with like Phantom, but like hearing those songs with a live orchestra is literally like nothing else. It's incredible. That overture is incredible. So it's always a fun time when you get to see Les Mis in a Mirvish Theater. But yeah, truly the Toronto audiences live for Les Mis. So they are amped for this.
Yeah. But no, I'm excited. It's always a good time to see Les Mis. I'm going to sob. It's reliable.
Yeah. You know what? That is the word. It is a reliable show.
A standard, you know exactly what you're going to get.
Yeah, you won't be disappointed.
Look down. Look down.
Although I will say, the last
episode... We're stealing bread twice this season. Aladdin
back
and
to back. Aladdin and...
Back to back. Bread thieves.
But what I will say, it will be hard to top the last Les Mis that was in Toronto, because Ramin was really... stellar.
That was a fantastic production.
Melissa O'Neill as Ebony.
Best Ebony.
Oh my god, everyone was so good. The two people that played the Thénardiers were amazing. It was just like a really well cast production. They basically brought that entire cast to Broadway. So yeah. That was such an amazing production. So I do think the standards are quite high, but it's also been a long time, and Les Mis is Les Mis. So, you know. You get Hugh Jackman sometimes, you get Ramin sometimes, and you get someone in between. So it is what it is.
Yeah. No, it'll be fun. It'll be fun to revisit again. Yeah. This seems kind of like a theme. Fun to revisit. That's the interesting thing. Of these seven shows, three, four are ones I've seen professional productions of before. And then 42nd Street we've seen a regional theater production of. So five shows I've seen productions of before. So only two that are new. One is literally a brand new show. Mm-hmm. And the other one is the one we're about to talk about.
Yes. Which is, give us the name.
It's Tina. Tina Turner musical.
We have been predicting Tina for a long time.
I know. Sometimes you just see a show and you're like, David Mirvish loves this show.
Which we will get to that one
we'll
show.
We'll get to that.
But we'll get to that.
Sometimes it just says David Mirvish all over it. I don't even know how involved David Mirvish is in the programming of the seasons. Probably not very involved at all.
But in our minds, he's very involved. In our minds, the curtain call of Tina on Broadway, it said David.
He was like, during the curtain call, he's like,
hello, what was the quote that Lynn said Toronto about Tina?
Adrian Warren is amazing. That was it.
You know what? Another thing that like not a fun to revisit. Obviously, we have not visited this in the first place. But how can this be not like this is going to be a fun time no matter what?
No, left a good job in the city, working for a man. Every night and day.
Will
no,
it give Donna Summer, though? Or will it give...
I don't think...
I'm trying to think another nothing. Two bucks. Or will it give The Bodyguard? What are we getting here?
Will it give
here?
The Bodyguard? Will it give Beautiful? Look, I don't think anything could give Summer Donna Summer... When I think of this musical, I do think of Donna Summer musical, but I don't think it is that. Summer Donna Summer musical was its own thing.
Entity.
Was its own beast. Was its own separate category that cannot be matched.
No. Will never be beat. It lives in its own category of jukebox musical.
Exactly. Tina, I'm just excited for the dancing. I'm excited for the music.
The curtain call.
The curtain call.
We've seen the curtain call. Like, the kid comes out to sing. Like, I'm interested to see who will be playing Tina. Because...
So, it's not here till next summer, basically.
No.
Currently, so looking at the cast and crew is probably not a good...
Gauge.
But, oh, wow. It's Ari Groover currently playing Tina Turner on tour, which, love. I was speaking of Head Over Heels earlier.
Yeah.
She was in Head Over Heels. She was in the ensemble. She was in Little Shop of Horrors.
Excited for the music, excited for the costumes, excited for the wigs. Can't wait for the wigs.
The costumes, the little fringe.
Yeah, everything.
I can't wait.
I think it's going to be great. So yeah, and this is another one that I think that the subscribers will really enjoy.
Yes, they eat up a jukebox musical.
Which leads me to the next jukebox musical, which is an add-on this year, which was another one that literally came out of nowhere.
A return home. After a previous out-of-town tryout here, which is another theme, Aladdin returning after an out-of-town tryout here. And this show returning after an out-of-town tryout here. Tara, what is it?
It is My Favorite Musical, Ain't Too Proud. Remember, this is one of our first, like, episodes when we were reading reviews of Ain't Too Proud.
Yeah.
A glorified PowerPoint presentation.
Don't forget. Okay, but this is the thing. I didn't see it when it was here. I've never seen Ain't Too Proud because I could not get a ticket. I could not get a ticket to the show.
I saw a very, very early. It was because my subscriber tickets are normally like the first 2 weeks of shows. Mm-hmm. So I swear we went week one and it was in rough shape. Everyone lived for it on Broadway, though. Don't get me wrong. The music, amazing. I think the issue with this show, which is the issue with, I think, a lot of jukebox musicals in general, is that the timeline is very long and they try to put every possible person in that timeline. We're getting Smokey Robinson. We're getting The Temptations. We're getting The Supremes. It's like, oh my God, like, take a break. Like, we can't focus on everybody.
That's why I think you liked how MJ worked, is that it focused on a specific moment and then kind of branched out from there. And I think even when we're talking about
also, quote me, MJ either next year or the year after.
What, isn't it going to Germany? Did they just announce MJ
it's on tour
Germany?
Right now in the US.
It's on tour in the US. I mean, MJ would slay here.
Oh my God, it'd be sold out every day.
Like, to me.
Yeah.
It would be sold out to me, a show I've never seen. But yeah, I think even when you talk about biopics, like, for movies and stuff, I think they're always much more successful when you pick an angle instead of the angle being birth to death. You know, you gotta pick a specific interesting moment in their lives to focus on. And The Temptations just did not do that. Or Ain't Too Proud did not do that.
No. But literally the other day, my dad was like, I want to see this show. He loves, like, that time period of music. Obviously, who doesn't? Like, it's such amazing music. But he specifically loved, like, Temptations music and like, again, he is a prime example of, like, the age range of a subscriber, so subscribers ate this show up when it was here. And that also leads to the next add-on that always
it's only here for 10 days.
I know, it's very quick, in and out,
so I'm wondering if they'll even do a rush for it. Like, they're just,
it's a very quick, it must be like a tour stop, they're like on the road.
It's an add-on. It's not part of the main season.
No. And another add-on that subscribers will eat up, Chicago.
I really have nothing to say about this.
We should, like, Chicago, I feel like, having a resurgence, but also why?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, we just saw it at Stratford last year. Yeah. As you said at the beginning of this episode, it's been on Broadway forever. The Ambassador will never be clear of Chicago, and apparently neither will the Merbush Theaters. I got a press release that was like, returning for the 9th time. I'm like,
okay. No. No.
But you know what? That's another one that I think is only here for like 10 days. It's very quick.
Yes, I agree. It's like, I'm going to have theories. It is a classic show. It's got that name recognition. It also is very inexpensive to run. So I get why it's still on Broadway. Like, the most expensive part of Broadway is probably the band, because it's a big band, because it's an encore transfer.
Yeah.
But the costumes, extremely minimal, set extremely minimal. It's inexpensive to run, and you can get, you know, that name recognition, especially post-movie. The movie was 20 years ago, but especially post-movie, you know, people are familiar with the story, familiar with the music, so you know you're gonna get butts in seats. It does not thrill me to have it come back. I think I'll probably skip it.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because I do think they might be banking a bit on the fact that, like, a lot of people saw it at Stratford last summer and really enjoyed the production. Maybe. So it's like, you liked it there, come see it again here type thing. So
it's also playing December 27th to January 6th. So I'm seeing a lot of people opening on Christmas morning tickets to Chicago.
Well, if Merbush says they're like, buy one, get one for $1 Boxing Day sale. That's where they get the majority of the sales.
Yes. The BOGO on I love when it's BOGO on Boxing Day. No, I know. But we have gotten good tickets on BOGO.
I bought, like, multiple Kinky Boots tickets on BOGO.
Remember Lightning Thief?
Oh my God, the BOGO of Lightning Thief.
The BOGO.
Bring that back.
Return
to Toronto.
I would watch Lightning Thief again.
Same.
I don't know
where it is.
It was so much fun.
And then to round out Mirvish, we're going to quickly go through the off Mirvish season. Steph, what is the play that has David Mirvish's name written all over it that we predicted?
To Kill a Mockingbird.
I really thought this was going to be main season. I really thought.
So it's at the Ed Mirvish, but it's only 1 week.
It has a star because my parents knew who it was.
Right.
And I cannot remember off the top of my head right now.
No, I know.
It is Richard Thomas.
Oh, yeah. I see him in the picture, but I do not know who that man is.
My parents have seen many TV shows or movies, including this man. It's kind of like the Paul Gross, King Lear situation in Stratford, I want to say.
I don't even know who that is. He was on The Waltons.
Yes, The Waltons. That was the show. Even my grandpa knew who he was.
10 episodes of Ozark.
Oh, that's also why they know who he is.
2 episodes of NCIS New Orleans.
Great.
1 episode of Blue Bloods. Okay, he's doing like bit parts in... Oh, 48 episodes of The Americans. Oh. My mom loves The Americans.
Okay. And then also off Mirvish, Pride and Prejudice, sort of, which I'm excited for this. This was an Olivier winner play, I think maybe last year, maybe the year before, best comedy, but it is a play with songs. So fun.
We love that. That's so much super fun.
Their artwork is very nice. So I'm kind of interested in this. Mm-hmm. There's a few other shows playing at Off Mirvish. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. And then there's a Crows Mirvish collab of Uncle Vanya, which is kind of interesting because Uncle Vanya will be playing at the Vivian Beaumont on Broadway next year as well. So, timing.
I always like when you... Well, not like, but I think it's interesting when something's playing on Broadway. This has happened a few times. And then we're able to catch a different production of it here. Because even if we're not able to catch what it is on Broadway, we have... context, information, perspective on it that we didn't have before.
Totally.
Which I love.
Yeah. And speaking of Crows, something that we've been waiting for years is finally coming, and that is the Crows Musical Stage Company collaboration of The Great Comet of Natasha and Pierre of 1812, starring our fave, Haley Gillis.
Starring so many of our faves,
Let's pull it up. I remember
let's
the day that the cast... notice went out, I sent it to you and I was like, oh my god, stacked. Like, it is stacked.
So many of our faves. Okay, I'm clicking read more. It runs from December 5th to January 7th currently. And where is the cast?
I'm assuming it's in the Big Crows Theater.
Divine Brown. Evan Bouillon, whose name I can never pronounce, as Pierre. We love. Marcus Nance. Haley Gillis, Andrew Penner, so many people we love.
Am I making it up? Is Louise Petrie in this?
I don't. Yes, she is. I didn't even see Louise Petrie. Louise Petrie. Like, truly, I'm not even saying everyone's name, but I am so excited about this. I'm so pumped.
We were teased before the cast list came out with the photo shoot for Great Comet, which featured Haley Gillis. And we were like, is that Haley? I'm not sure if that's Haley. And then there was like a caption on the photo that said like photographed Haley Gillis.
And then the cast list went out. Is this old or new?
I know.
But yeah, so excited. We love her singing Dave Molloy music. That's kind of our first introduction to her singing Ghost Quartet. So her singing
Hero.
They're singing more Dave Molloy music. Cannot wait. Cannot wait to see what they do with the space at Crows.
I wonder if Dave Molloy will come, because I swear he came here for Ghost Quartet.
I remember his like parents coming.
Great.
For Ghost Quartet. I don't know if he came.
I just feel like we've been talking about this show forever. So
it was originally supposed to be December 2020.
Yeah. There was no cast attached at that time.
No.
But it's just been, like, something that's been on a list for literally 3 years. So to finally see it this year, like, I can't wait.
Because I've never seen a production of it. You've never seen a production
of it. Me
either.
I've also barely listened to this cast recording. So I'm kind of walking in, like, fresh.
I listened to it a bit, but not super, super familiar. But
yeah,
it's one of those things that every piece of information I see about it, like, excites me so much. So, yeah, probably my most anticipated show of the year.
Yeah, of this year, except for there is, which we will get to a bit later, there is a return show that is maybe my most anticipated show of the year. But
let's talk about
I will say about Comet, we will be doing an episode. This will be like kind of one of our last episodes for the year, because it is in December. Should we move straight to Soulpepper then while we're here?
One brief thing. Yes. Musical stages uncovered this year.
Oh, yes. I did write that down.
Is Fleetwood Mac and the Eagles. So
great.
I can't wait
to
see that.
I don't even know if we really like talked about I think we did talk about it. I can't remember when.
Briefly.
But we saw the ABBA uncovered this year. This was the
Speaking
first
of Haley Gillis.
Yes. It was Speaking the first uncovered that we had been to.
Mm-hmm.
Her version of Mamma Mia, specifically, which you can listen to on Spotify or Apple Music. Great. Yeah. That was such a good concert. Also, the woman, I cannot remember her name right now off the top of my head, but who sang...
The Winner Takes It All,
was in Rent at Stratford.
Right now.
So...
Is her name, like... Kelly Holliffe?
Yes.
Did I make that up?
Wow. Good job. She's in Stratford, which is, she's in Rent right now. She's playing like Mark's mother. I think she understudies Maureen.
Yeah.
That was, Musical Stage Company, I'm sure, will maybe have something else. They'll probably have like a reprint, retold, whatever we saw last year kind of situation. So that will come out later. But now to Soulpepper. I only have one thing written down here.
Me too.
It is the return of Alice in Wonderland. I literally cannot wait to see this again.
Jen Rydershaw came on our podcast and told us this was coming, and it had not been announced yet. And we were like, it's coming.
We literally gasped. We gasped. She also told us that Spamalot was extending, and then that information did not come out for like 3 weeks.
And we're like, oh, Jen.
And now it's extended.
Fire
so
her?
Go
what are they
going to
do? Fire her? No,
yeah.
She's gone. She's out. And also, to be fair, Soulpepper has a lot of other productions happening, but
they do.
We are a musicals focused podcast.
Yes.
And so we were speaking of musicals. No, truly, Alice in Wonderland is my favorite show we've seen this year. We saw it in January. It ran from December to January last year. And it's honestly nothing that I've seen this year so far has topped it. Maybe I'm just holding it in such a high place in my heart, but I really don't think anything has topped it yet. I can't think. And I am truly so excited to get to see it again. We will be buying tickets immediately.
It was so original. It was so emotional. And
it's crazy
we had no idea what we were in for. And then had the best time ever.
It's crazy how original it felt for something that is based on source material that you know so well. Like, that is how you do adaptation. That is how you adapt a known work and make it so creative and original. I can't wait to see it again. We should have someone in the creative team on the show.
I think it was written by Fiona. I can't remember last name, but who was also in the show is also like Bad Hats. This is a Bad Hats Soulpepper collab again. But yeah, tickets are on sale right now. Literally run. Run to this production. Also, if you are listening to us and happen to have kids, take your kids. It is so, so good. Definitely one of the best things, not that I've just seen this year, that I've seen in a few years. It was so good. I cannot wait to see it again. Okay, where are we going next? Let me just say, I put this on here just because we just mentioned Rent briefly. We've been talking about it off and on, but Canadian Opera Company is doing La Boheme, and I think we're going to go.
We're definitely going to try to go. We're going to find a discount ticket.
It's kind of soon, but I think we're going to go.
As someone who is aging out of, who has just aged.
I'm still here.
As someone who has just aged out of a lot of youth ticket programs, to my depression, we're going to find a way to go.
Yeah.
For not that much money, because the opera's expensive.
Yes. So that was just a quick little thing there. Another quick little thing to shout out. We talked about this last year, but at Theater Aquarius in October, Jake Epstein will be there with Boy Falls from the Sky. We loved that one-man show. So if you are... Where is Theater Aquarius again?
Hamilton.
It
was in Hamilton.
Great. Oh, I didn't look up Drayton this year, actually. I forgot to do Drayton.
I know. You know, I'm actually looking at Theater Aquarius to see if there's anything else good coming up.
But yeah, we absolutely loved that one-man show. And I saw it twice. It was so, so good. It was a really great show.
They're doing Uncle Vanya, too.
Look at them. Grand Theater is doing Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory Christmas. And I don't know what's happening next season yet. And then I know these are plays, but Canadian Stage is bringing some Broadway heavy hitter play names. Mm-hmm. Currently, as we are recording this episode, as it will be released, Top Dog Underdog is playing at Canadian Stage. Mm-hmm. Casting just went out for the Lehman Trilogy today. I have not seen who's in it. And then Inheritance Part 1 and Part 2, which I believe is starring Stephen Jackman Torkoff, who was just playing Richard in the Stratford, like, disco production of Richard II. So fun.
I just think
it's funny when I'm, like, hearing myself talk about this stuff, because literally 5 years ago, we were so unaware of, like, Canadian actors. And now look at me filing off these names.
No, I one of the great things about doing the podcast is that we have, like, forced ourselves, and I don't mean that in a bad way, I mean that in a great way.
To learn
so much more and to be exposed to so much more kinds of theater. Like, 5 years ago, our favorite show would have never been Alice in Wonderland at Soul Pepper. We wouldn't have even, it wouldn't have even crossed our radar. And
we wouldn't have seen it. We would have never even, like, Googled it.
No, and now it's, like, one of the favorite things. We're so lucky to live in a, live near slash in a city that has so many, not just, like, tours come through, but original productions or mountings of shows here. And for us to kind of expose ourselves and to be exposed to as many of them as possible has been so fun.
No, it's amazing. It's actually crazy to think about where we were 5 years ago and think about where we are now and the knowledge that we have gained. The knowledge, and also, like, we're now, like, fans of these people who I didn't even know existed. And I wish, we say this all the time, but, like, I just think about, like, talking to, like, Britta Johnson and how we never saw any of her shows until, like, this year. And it's just, like, I feel like we miss so much.
Yeah.
And now I never want to miss, like, anything again type thing.
We're catching
up. Which is unrealistic and crazy, but, like, it's just...
We're catching up.
I don't know. The theater scene is, as you said, like, we are so, so lucky to have such an amazing theater scene in Toronto specifically. Mm-hmm. I just feel, like, very lucky in that. To continue on this list before we get to the two final big heavy hitter out-of-town places.
Our road trips.
Coal Mine Theater this year is doing Dion, a rock musical. Which I'm interested in. There was a workshop that happened last summer. Robert Marcus was in it, because I remember seeing it on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's kind of like Greek god-esque.
So it is a rock opera, is a fully sung rock opera based on Euripides, the Bacchae, B-A-C-C-H-A-E. Usually I'm good at pronunciations, but I'm a little stuck on that one. Bacchae. I'm thinking of, like, Bacchus, like the god of, like, gluttony. Okay. Book by Prince Edward Islands poet novelist Stephen Mayoff. Music by Coal Mine's co-founder Ted Dykstra. 4 years in the making.
Oh, Ted Dykstra.
Ted Dykstra, right? 4 years in the making, the Coal Mine has developed the show from scratch with two-week workshops over that time. And then there's a full... summary. We went to Coal Mine for the first time this year to see Yerma. I think about weekly, on a weekly basis.
That space.
Yeah, it's a really great space.
Yeah.
It's basically a black box, but it's a really great space.
I also know that, like, my friend Nick, friend of the podcast, Nick, his best friend Jacob is starring in
fantastic.
This. Fantastic. Cannot Dion. Wait. I believe...
Can we have him on?
Maybe.
Probably. Let's talk about this off air, but
yes.
Maybe we can get a hookup.
Yeah. But yeah, another, like, Canadian original musical, so great.
We're lucky. We're very lucky.
Yeah. Okay, and now to our road trip shows. Let's start with the breaking news from this morning, which was already
We knew this, rumored.
Yeah. Who did you hear this from? Jay Kelly, right?
Jay Kelly's my strength. He tells me everything. I feel like Jay we're Kelly buddies. He doesn't know who we
today.
Are, but we... I follow him on Twitter. He tells me things.
Jay Kelly... Jay Kelly dropped a blind item a few weeks ago, and then I got the press release this morning that Shaw Festival is bringing My Fair Lady. I feel like this is, once again, a classic Shaw Festival show.
Have you ever seen a production of My Fair Lady?
I have never seen a production.
Right. I've only seen the most recent Broadway revival. When Laura Benanti was in it. I saw it, like, her second week. It is literally a stunning, beautiful show. And I think Shaw Festival can do it really well. Like, I think it's one of those shows that Shaw Festival can nail.
I was talking to a friend of the podcast, Alex, today, and she was saying that she also saw that Laura Benanti production, and she said if she hadn't seen My Fair Lady, she would definitely go and see this, but because she has seen that one, she doesn't want to, like, ruin that memory, really? And also the show was, like, 3 hours long, so it's
it is long. It is long.
But I do want to read the tweet that Jay Kelly posted this morning, which was... He said, interesting, My Fair Lady is set to run from May 4th all the way to December 22nd, because I had messaged you about this being like, oh, only Christmas, Carol, at Christmas? Yeah. I guess the festival has determined the regular season and holiday season audiences are pretty much separate.
This holiday season at Shaw Festival, mm-hmm. Brigadoon is returning from, like, a pre-pandemic production.
Which I think...
While reviewed,
we will try to see.
I agree. We'll try to see it. Yeah. We were thinking about seeing it last time, but then we didn't end up making it. But now this time, I think we're pretty committed to seeing it. Again, another classic musical. Now that you've seen Schmigadoon, you'll have really good context for Brigadoon.
You're right.
You kind of went in the opposite direction.
Yes.
Yeah, the thing about My Fair Lady, so we've been just talking about Shaw Festival. We've seen a few Shaw Festival shows. The first few we saw, we were not that impressed by. And then this summer, we saw Gypsy, which we absolutely adored.
Talk about one of the best shows we've seen this year.
Shocking. Talk about it. Yeah, we saw Gypsy and we were like, oh, Shaw Festival back in the game.
Exactly.
Because Shaw Festival, you're back in our numbers. Because we
Shaw
were kind Fest of like,
has entered the chat once again.
literally just dropped the mic with Gypsy. No, because really we were quite unimpressed with previous productions.
Yeah.
And just honestly based on show choice, mm-hmm. To be fair. And I think My Fair Lady kind of straddles Gypsy and let's say like Holiday Inn or... whatever else we saw.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know. Damn Yankees. I think My Fair Lady sits kind of in the middle of those shows in that it is a classic romance for those people, but it also has a lot more going on than, let's say, something like Damn Yankees. Maybe that's ungenerous to Damn Yankees, but that production of Damn Yankees kind of did nothing for me.
Yeah.
Not to be so hard, but...
I do think, as you said, like, we have been... It's actually interesting. We've been unimpressed, and then I spoke to someone at work who was also unimpressed. Same thing of, like, I don't know if I will return to Shaw Festival because I've been so unimpressed. And we mm-hmm. literally had that mentality driving to Niagara-on-the-Lake this summer. And then we walked out of Gypsy and was like, I will return to Shaw Festival.
No, it was fantastic. It was stunning. But I think that was so much show choice. Like, them choosing to do this
show. But also, like, the Mama Rose was ridiculous.
Amazing.
So, like,
amazing.
If your cast is weak, like, it's weak,
the
right?
Set.
So,
the set is
the
beautiful.
The set was amazing.
That, like, rotating kind of proscenium.
Credited Shaw Fest to this stage trick that actually happens in every version of Gypsy, but it still was the coolest thing I've ever seen.
We'd never seen it before, and it brought me to tears, this stage trick.
Yeah, it's insane.
And it wasn't even, like we were talking about... No, I'm literally crying thinking about it. We were talking to about Back to the Future earlier and the stage trick at the end. And that is one with technology. That is a tech stage trick. This stage trick was like lights and people.
It's a strobe
light. Lights and dancing.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was crazy. Like one of the greatest things.
There were two men that were sitting in the front row and during it, they did not stop clapping the whole time because they were invested.
Yes, it was thrilling. It was a thrilling moment.
It was great. It was so good. So yeah, so, I'm excited to return to Shaw Fest to see what's in store.
No, I think My Fair Lady will really suit the talents and like the kind of the style of show that Shaw Fest likes to do. So I'm excited.
Yeah. And we know that they have a very good budget for set. So
yes,
that's great for a show.
One of my favorite things. So when I saw My Fair Lady in New York, it was at the Vivian Beaumont. And because it's a thrust stage, and it has that like semicircle. When they're at the horse races, they did this thing where everyone was on the stage, and I'm sure they do it all the time. And they had the sound, like the audio of the horses, kind of follow
around
us behind,
and
then the everyone on stage's eyes followed the sound. It was so cool. It was one of the greatest things.
That's really good.
Another great thing is they brought the whole orchestra on stage, and I cried when they did that. Like the entire orchestra just like wheeled out, and I was like,
yeah, yes. I don't know if that will happen.
It was at amazing.
The festival theater.
It was amazing when they brought the whole orchestra out.
Yeah.
And they were playing, like, the waltz at the top of Act Two.
Wow.
Okay.
Speaking of a thrust. We've actually been sitting on this information since our interview with Jen Ryder Shaw, who also told us the two Stratford
she
musicals
loves to spill
for the upcoming
tea.
Season. I love it. We love it. It was an off-mic conversation, but, like, it's fine. So at Stratford this season, the two musicals are Le Cage aux Folles and Something Rotten. Very different on the scale of musicals.
They're both musical comedies, I would say, though.
Both musical comedies. I would say that Something Rotten follows the Spamalot trajectory. However, this is a show about Shakespeare, so I do think that it is the perfect place for this to play. I also love this cast recording, so I do think that this will be fun. And I think we both said that we believe we will see the return of Dan Shamroy because these
really
shows seem to fit the bill.
I 100% agree that we're about to see the return of Dan Shamroy because I can't imagine him not being in Something Rotten. So I cannot wait. I cannot wait to see what's coming.
Have you seen Le Cage aux Folles?
I've never seen Le Cage aux Folles.
I thought I might have, but I don't remember.
Like a Mirvish production.
Yeah, Mirvish brought it, but so, like a long, long time ago.
So I think it's interesting to discuss because let's actually talk about, we've been talking on this podcast a lot about, is it still funny to mine comedy from a man dressing up as a woman?
We've also had this conversation with Stratford actors.
Yes. And what I'm going to say is I think Le Cage aux Folles is the exception. I think this, not that I've seen this production, but I do think it works in this specific story, like The Birdcage, where because it is not a punchline. I mean, it is obviously a joke that this male character is dressing up as a woman, but the reasoning behind it is to kind of appease their child's fiance's conservative mm-hmm. parents. Mm-hmm. And so I think the reasoning behind it just kind of like makes it fit a bit more in a way that a lot of other shows is just like, isn't it hilarious? A man in a dress.
Yeah.
Or, you know, men can't get a job anymore these days. They've got to be a woman. Sorry, Tootsie, Mrs. Doubtfire, like all these things. I think Le Cage aux Folles.
Also, like, sorry, but it's the opposite in real life.
No, I know. That's why. That's why it's so like icky when these other shows are doing it. But yeah. I think Le Cage aux Folles uses this kind of like overused trope. And it's obviously like a very old show. And makes it have impact as opposed to make it feel icky. And I also think it's interesting.
Yeah, go ahead.
One more thing. They're also doing Twelfth Night this season at Stratford, which is another show where characters are dressing up as the opposite gender. And I think those two shows, like in conversation with each other in the same season, is maybe an interesting kind of double feature to see.
I think they're also doing Romeo and Juliet again. And I was like, is this the year that we go to a Shakespeare?
Look.
No.
Here's the thing about me. I love Romeo and Juliet. I will see any production of Romeo and Juliet. I love it.
I kind of want to see a production of Twelfth Night.
Twelfth Night is so good. These are all shows we've seen at like Shakespeare in Hyde Park, which we did miss this year. Sorry to Shakespeare in Hyde Park. They used to do it like full summer. Now they've only been doing half a summer. It's interesting.
No, but one more thing what I was going to say about Le Cage is that another interesting thing talking about like things playing in places at the same time, they literally just closed a production of it at Regent Theatre in the UK, the like open air theatre. So,
oh, wow.
It's just interesting like timeline wise when like something is popular again in the UK and then it's popular again at like Stratford,
like,
which is mini UK, you know?
Like the parallel thinking between multiple theatre companies at a similar time.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes there's just something in the air that makes this show feel relevant or makes this show, you know, the right casting comes up for different shows all at the same time. So yeah, these are both shows I've never seen before on stage, so I'm excited for both of them, honestly.
The, kind of phrase that Stratford is using for the upcoming season is that the theme is that it is a world elsewhere, so.
Oh.
Fun. Which I understand, like.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense.
A World Elsewhere. Anthony Cimolino. Yeah, 12th Night, Anthony. Something Rotten. Okay. At the festival, it's... Something Rotten is at the festival.
Yes.
Which is The Thrust, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
that's where Rent is right now. Yeah.
And the Avon, which is where La Cage Folle is going to be. What's going to be at the Tom Patterson?
And then also, like, the kids play...
Peg Appler.
...is Wendy and Peter Pan, which is also very cute.
Yeah. So fun. Love that. Tom Patterson usually does plays, but, like, Hedda Gabler. So fun.
Dare I say that Canada is more exciting than New York?
No, no. I think I'm more excited for what's coming here than in New York. And I'm sure there'll be more things announced here, too. Obviously,
yeah,
also, we're only focused on musicals. There are a lot of plays happening in many of the theater companies that we've discussed already. But, you know what you get when you come here.
Yeah.
Okay? We have a singular focus.
At least
we always say we're going to see more plays.
Yerma was great last year.
I love
this
Yerma.
Year.
This year? It was this year?
This year. My God.
Should we
what
see Top Dog Underdog? Should we see Top Dog Underdog?
I said this to you before. I think the one that I would be interested in, I know it's two parts, but like The Inheritance.
I'm sorry, I'm not doing that.
What about the Lehman Trilogy?
I don't think I'm doing that either. I know Matthew Lopez wrote The Inheritance, and I loved Red, White, and Royal Blue.
Yeah.
So, written by the same.
What a... They're same, 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 same.
Same, same. Same,
yeah.
Yeah. Did I make up that there's a production of Angels in America happening somewhere?
I don't know. The last thing that we saw at Canadian Stage was Choir Boy. I don't even know if we've talked about Choir Boy. It was good.
Buddies in Bad Times is doing
Angels
in America. Yeah.
Talk about a long show.
I would see that. I would see that two-part.
How long is that? Like 8 hours? I'm out. Yeah. So with that is the Toronto and surrounding areas season preview. And it is now time for our obsession of the week.
Are we ready for my obsession of the week?
Yes.
Okay. I don't remember exactly when this musical came into my consciousness. I believe it was from TikTok, but I had it kind of in the back of my mind as for an obsession for a long time, and then it kind of went away. But it came back because of a very timely announcement that was just made. It was recently announced that in London, a production of the musical Fangirls, which is an Australian musical,
oh, yeah.
will be premiering. Have you seen this?
I did see the poster or whatever for this.
Have you ever listened to any music from the cast recording?
I have never listened to anything.
Okay, so it's quite interesting. I'm going to read you a little summary. Of the show. It concerns a 14-year-old Edna, a diehard fan of the biggest boy band in the world, True Connection, and its lead singer, Harry. It was inspired by interviews with hundreds of teenage fangirls.
Is it just coincidence that his name is Harry?
It cannot be. Well, here's the thing. Harry is a common name. Harry
no,
is
I know, but what
name.
Year did this musical come out?
2019.
Okay, so
no.
Not coincidence. This is a
like,
another
is
Harry Styles
Harry.
Fan fiction caveat.
There's a very famous Harry who was also in a boy band. Yeah, the way they describe it, they were on the boy band came from a reality show. There were five. He was eliminated.
Got it.
And then he was brought back to come
it
into it. Right. Okay.
It sounds like
it's all making sense. It's becoming clear. It's all becoming clear. So basically, my obsession of the week is the cast recording from that original world premiere in Australia, where it was originally written, is out, and you can listen to it. But I am going to highlight the song Nobody. It's got a little piece of one of the True Connection songs in it. That's kind of fun to listen to. And I really think the musical is fun. And
sorry,
I really
True Connections and One Direction?
Yeah, the band is called True Connection. The band is called True Connection.
I love it.
The band is called True Connection. Yeah, I listened to the cast recording before, but yeah, this song, Nobody, is a bit of a standout. It's kind of about, like, you know, nobody understands or... nobody understands him the way I do. Nobody's looking out for him the way I do. This kind of like obsessive fan. And then you get to hear a bit from one of the True Connection songs as well, which is really fun.
I feel like this is right up my alley.
I think you'd like it. It's giving a little bit modern musical theater, but it's fun.
Okay, great.
Hey,
Sarah, what's your obsession this week?
My obsession this week, and I know you also listened to it, is a joint obsession. It's something that led me to do something else, and that is we both listened to the Laura Bell Bundy Sentimental Men podcast.
Hilarious.
If you are not listening to Sentimental Men, the TikTok was outrageous. If you're not listening to Sentimental Men, you should be, because we've talked about them before. They are a podcast that, like, is primarily, like, focused on Wicked, and they talk to, like, other actresses that have been in the show. And the Laura Bell Bundy episode was so chaotic because she was backstage getting ready for The Cottage. And it was, like, what, 6:30? I feel like when she was recording...
She's, like, doing her eyelashes.
She was... Watch the video on TikTok or on Instagram. She is putting on her makeup. She is putting on her costume. There are multiple people walking in and out of her dressing room, and she's still, like... giving them
asking more questions
everything
me. let's keep going.
She was like, I know you have rapid fire, and Kevin was like, it's fine, just have a good show. She's like, no, we'll do the rapid fire.
And then I heard she doesn't even leave the stage in The Cottage. She's on stage the whole time. So
she said in the episode that she doesn't even get to go to the bathroom.
For her to do that and then just to run on stage and do the full show,
brain flip,
the stamina,
she's amazing. But what it led me to do, which I have not done in a very long time, is listen to the Legally Blonde cast recording.
One of the best.
It is so good. I love that show so much. We obviously did an episode on it. But hearing her talk about, like, the Galinda Elwood's, like, career, to think that she did both of those before she was 27 years old is absolutely wild.
Yeah.
And Galinda is, like, its own beast, but, like, Elle never leaves the stage, ever. Like, she is doing...
She said Elle is harder.
Yeah.
She said Elle is harder than
Which I believe, because, like, you know, you get to use your, like, upper top register for Galinda, which is, like, fun, but Elle, you're singing so fast, you're belting, like, every single song. Like, you never get a break. So I've been listening to the Legally Blonde cast recording, and my obsession of the week, along with this specific episode, is the song, my favorite song, Take It Like a Man. I love that scene. I love that song. I love everything about this show in particular. And it's funny because, like, we were talking about this literally last week when we were talking about modern musical theater, and, like, they don't make shows like Legally Blonde anymore. And I say, bring it back.
Not quite the guy I'd have chose to be, but when she's standing so close to me, I think I like her plan.
Here's your chance to make
chance to make it.
Take it like,
so take it like a
man. But yeah, that episode of their podcast was amazing.
Really fun.
Honestly, go onto their TikTok or Instagram page and just watch, like, any of the clips. They really get the, like, good information out of these women. They do the work. They do the work that I'm interested in. I can't wait for their Wicked movie episodes. I can't wait.
Are you a Wizard and I Elphaba? A Defying Gravity Elphaba? Or a No Good Deed Elphaba?
I mean, I've never played the role.
I know.
I can't sing any
just
of
in your own
songs.
Just in your own bedroom, which one are you?
I think Wizard and I.
Yeah, I agree.
For you or for me?
what do you
think I am?
No. I mean, the Wizard and I is my favorite of those three songs. And I think you are a Wizard and I alphabet. I agree with that.
The journey. I don't know. I feel like there's not many that would be No Good Deed.
A lot of them say No Good Deed. A lot of them say No Good Deed.
Really?
Yeah.
I've heard quite a few of, like, Defying Gravity, Wizard and I just think that No Good Deed is, like, I feel like once you get there, you're like, I just gotta get through this song, and then, like,
yeah, you're like,
then
the
I'm
show's
okay.
Over.
Yeah. So I feel like you're still, like, waiting for it the whole time because it's
so much. No, but it's
so
like a
much.
Release. You can kind of, like, scream during that song.
What was the
know?
Ones that they Listen said? To. Are you a, was it No One Mourns the Wicked? Popular?
Is it popular? No One Mourns the Wicked. Is it I'm Not That Girl? No, it's got to be something else.
Is it For Good? No, that wouldn't make sense.
I don't even know what it is.
The answer is popular.
I was going to say, I think I'm a Thank Goodness.
Thank Goodness is probably.
Thank Goodness, Glinda. Bridges you've crossed, you didn't know you were crossing until you crossed.
In, like, a different life, I would say I would like to be in No One Mourns the Wicked, because I just think, how iconic to come down from the buffalo. Like, it would be incredible.
Goodness knows.
Yeah.
The Wicked. How do we get to Wicked here?
We always get to Wicked here, and with that, we will end this episode.
So that is our obsession of the week. That is the Toronto and surrounding area season preview. And our next episode will be our review of In Dreams.
We've got a really good fall.
We do have a really good fall. We are stacked. We are seeing things every other like weekend, and then we are going to New York. So it's a very busy and exciting time. In Dreams is our next episode. But before then, you can listen to any of our other episodes by subscribing to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also watch us on YouTube. Don't forget to leave us a comment and subscribe.
And you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Off2BOA Podcast. That's with the number 2.
And we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.